Oh my god, it's so off. That's so funny. No, it's okay, because it'll work, because if that's lagging, like, the it'll work, I promise. Okay. I don't like having to do an intro, even though we've been talking for the past 20 minutes. More like the past hour. Hey, guys. It's me and Addie again.
Hello.
We're trying something new. We're trying to do this remotely. So we're on FaceTime right now and recording on GarageBand separately.
Yeah. And we'll see how this goes.
We'll see how it goes. It was an interesting process. But it seems to be working thus far, so I'm pretty confident in it. I'm apologizing again for this being late, because my life's a disaster. So as soon as I dropped Addie off to go home last week, I waited in the emergency vet parking lot for 6 hours because Paisley has been sick. And I've been working on trying to get her better this week, and I just feel like shit about it because I was supposed to have this out yesterday. And here we are.
But you're a great dog mom, and you've been doing so much for Paisley, and you need to give yourself credit for that. So here's me giving you credit for that.
I appreciate you. Yeah, and I miss Addie a lot, and I've been crying about it, but
I have been so sad since I left New Hampshire, and it's just like, it was such a great week, and I like miss it so much, but I'll be back there soon enough, so it's fine.
What was your birthday yesterday? How was that?
It was super fun. So a couple of my friends, my college friends, came down, and they're going to Long Island, so they stopped by my house, and we got to hang out a little bit. Yesterday morning, we went out to brunch, and then I went shopping with my friend Kane, and it was just like so fun. Nice. And then afterwards I went to a dinner party. It was just like a packed day of activities, and it was super fun because I got to see like a bunch of people that I haven't seen since the pandemic started. So mm-hmm. It was just like very fulfilling. I felt very like loved and productive and stuff like that.
Hell yeah.
It's great.
That's good. I'm glad you had a good day. Also, I have to shout, what's that?
I said, yeah, me too. I'm glad it was also a good day.
I have to shout someone out real quick because he was the first person to ever send me an email telling me how much he liked my podcast, and he recently started his own. He's recording his first episode today. His name is Michael, and I don't have my phone on me. I believe his podcast is called Extreme Paranormal, but it's not like E-X-T-R-E-M-E. It's the letter X, Extreme. Yeah. Like, so extreme without the E in the beginning. And he's super sweet. We've talked a couple times. He reaches out to me every now and then, and I reach out, and you know, he's just a nice guy, and I just want to give him a shout out because I am very excited to listen to his first episode, and I'm excited that maybe we'll be in this endeavor together.
Yeah. Oh my god, congratulations, Mike. Best of luck.
He was the first email I ever got. He sent me case suggestions and listener stories, and we emailed back and forth like 4 or 5 times. It was just the sweet, he was the sweetest person I've ever met. So I just wanted to shout him out because he DM'd me either last night or this morning asking if he could talk about my podcast. So I was like, yeah, but only if I can talk about yours.
That's so sweet. That's so nice.
He's an angel. I adore him. So anyway, I'm going to bring us back down, way, and ruin everyone's life. You're welcome.
I'm excited to be ruined.
Have you ever heard of Sylvia Likens, Addie?
I haven't.
Oh, well, good, because this is going to ruin your fucking life. This case is the one that broke me. I'm destroyed emotionally. I have been researching this for 3 days because I've had to take so many breaks.
Yeah.
And it's been awful. So I'm going to put a trigger warning in here. I wrote it in all caps. The first note I have, major trigger warning in all caps. It contains rape, child abuse, emotional abuse, literally every form of abuse you can think of. And it's brutal and horrible. And so if you're interested in learning about this case but can't handle all of what's in it, there's a movie called An American Crime, and it's free pretty much everywhere. I watched it on Peacock, but I think it's on Hulu and YouTube as well. It's free on YouTube, and then I'm pretty sure it's on demand. Like, you can find it anywhere. It's extremely historically accurate, but it's a lot less graphic than what actually happened. And to just let you guys know how brutal this is, the movie The American Crime movie was not, it was a Sundance film, and they did not release it in theaters because of how brutal it was, but it wasn't even 10% as bad as what actually happened. They cut out so much. So
it's going to be pretty bad.
So you guys know, it's going to be bad. And if you're squeamish or have kids, I suggest you don't listen to this one. I will not be offended. I know I'm probably going to get emails about this, but I feel that it's important to tell her story. And just because I know a lot of people don't know about it, but this is probably the most horrific crime in American history. So, here we go, I guess. Are you sure? About to cry. So, Sylvia Marie Likens was born on January 3rd, 1949, to Lester and Betty Likens. Her nickname to her friends and family was Cookie.
That's so cute.
Isn't that just melt your heart? She was the middle child of five, but she was the only child that wasn't a twin. So, she was the, dead middle child, but the only one who's not a twin. So, her older twins were Daniel and Diana, and they were 2 years older. And then Benny and Jenny were a year younger than her. And Jenny, who is her younger sister, suffered from polio, and she wore a steel brace on one leg. So she only had one strong leg. Lester and Betty, the parents, had a very unstable relationship. They worked at carnivals selling candy and soda, but they didn't make nearly enough money that they needed to support their family. So they did the traveling carnival thing, and they usually took their sons with them. But Diana was older at that point, so it, like, didn't matter where she was. And so what they would do with Sylvia and Jenny is they would leave her with family members, usually their grandmother. And they were also concerned that if Jenny and Sylvia were to go with them, because it is the 50s at this point, they're worried about their safety and their education, because women are actually starting to get rights. And they're like, use this to your advantage. Take advantage of this. So that's why they kind of just had them stay put with family members. So Sylvia didn't have a real job per se. She would make money doing little jobs here or there. She would babysit, run errands for people, or iron clothes for them. And she would sometimes give some of that money to her mother to help support the rest of her family. Sylvia was described as friendly, confident, and lively. She loved music, especially the Beatles. She was also very involved with the church and a devout Catholic. As cheerful as she was, Sylvia never smiled with her teeth due to the fact that she was missing a front tooth. She had lost it when she was playing with one of her brothers, and it got knocked out when they were playing too rough. So she never smiled with her teeth because she was missing one of her front teeth. But she was still beautiful. Like, I showed you that picture.
Oh my god, she was gorgeous.
You have to look at a picture of her. Like, look her up right now. But just don't. The autopsy photos and the crime scene photos are there, so please just don't get caught up in that, unless you're crazy. Actually, that's a lie, because I did it. I'm insane. So because Sylvia and Jenny were often left behind, not left behind, but were, you know, always staying together with relatives, they became very, very close, and Sylvia being older was very protective of her.
Mm-hmm.
Jenny was disabled, and Sylvia kind of I wouldn't say she took responsibility, but she definitely took initiative to take care of Jenny. Where was I? Okay. She was very close to Jenny, very protective. And when they would go ice skating together all the time. And so Sylvia would hold Jenny's hands, so Jenny would be able to skate on one foot because she only had one good foot.
That's like so one cute.
Truly functioning foot.
Right.
So Sylvia would just hold her hands so she would be able to skate. On July 3rd, 1965, Betty, the mother, was arrested for shoplifting. And due to this and having three other kids, Lester decided it would be best to let Jenny and Sylvia stay elsewhere until they could get their feet on the ground. So Jenny and Sylvia had become acquainted with two girls, Paula and Stephanie Banaszewski, while they were attending Arsenal Technical High School in Indianapolis, Indiana. One day, Jenny and Sylvia didn't come home on time because they were with Paula and Stephanie, and Lester heard that they were back at Paula and Stephanie's house. So he came looking for them and then met their mother, Gertrude. And I'm going to talk a little bit about her because, you know, I was trying to get the slightest bit of understanding into this monster's head, but I just couldn't, but whatever. Gertrude was 36, and she was a single mother to 7 children. Paula, who was 17, Stephanie, who was 15, John, who was 12, Marie, who was 11, Shirley, who was 10, James, who was 8, and Dennis Jr., who was only a year old.
Oh, wow.
So she had a lot going on.
Yeah.
She was described as a haggard, underweight, asthmatic chain smoker.
Okay.
And she was severely depressed, same, due to 3 failed marriages and a recent miscarriage.
Girl, I'm sorry, but like, never mind.
Say it.
I don't.
She sucks.
I don't blame her, but also, like, that is a lot. That is just like a lot. You have 7 kids, and it's...
Oh, it just gets worse. Just wait.
Okay.
Well, on top, I believe I didn't write this down, but I believe she had something along the lines of like 13 different pregnancies and 6 of them were miscarriages. So almost half of her pregnancies ended in miscarriage.
That's very tragic.
She did get married and divorced 3 times.
Yeah.
And her youngest, the 1-year-old, had a different baby daddy. So whatever. So she worked small, odd jobs around town, such as ironing for people, sewing their clothes, hemming their clothes, altering them, whatever they need to do, or cleaning to earn money for her family. So she really didn't have a job either. Mm. But Paula, being the eldest child, worked a lot to support the family as well. So I didn't read that. That was from the movie, and I just assumed it to be true because it makes the most sense out of everything. So don't quote me on that, but that was something that was in the movie that I felt was true.
Yeah.
And so Lester got to liking her after having a conversation with her, literally a small conversation with her the day they met, and was like, hey, you wanna let my kids live here until November? And she was like, yes, just give me $20 a week, which in 1965 was $150. So in today's time, it would have been $150 a week.
Right.
So she's like, I'll take your children for $20 a week.
And this guy was just like, oh, this is reliable.
He's like, my wife's in jail. Who gives a shit?
Okay.
It was a different time, to be fair, but also, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Shortly after the 4th of July, Jenny and Sylvia moved into 3850 East New York Street while their parents traveled to the East Coast with the carnival.
Mm-hmm.
After about 2 weeks, Lester's payments were arriving a day or two late just because the mail person, it just happens. And Gertrude took her anger out on Jenny and Sylvia by beating their bare skin with various objects, such as paddles, and she would say to them, quote, I took care of you 2 little bitches for a week for nothing.
What? Excuse me, what?
I'm not gonna lie, that's probably the best, not the best part, but the least horrible part about this entire...
She sounds very fucking unhinged in the worst way, and...
You should meet her kids.
Oh my god.
So, yeah, and then their dad's payment came the next fucking day. Like, it was coming a day or two late, and she was just, like, beating them for it, even though it's not their fault.
Right.
So, she had done this regularly to them anytime a payment was missed, and by mid-August, Gertrude was focusing her abuse on Sylvia due to jealousy of her appearance and future potential. Because she was smart, she was kind, she was funny. So Gertrude was literally jealous of a 16-year-old girl. I think I forgot to mention that. Sylvia was 16 and Jenny was 15 when they moved in here. I don't think I mentioned that. So initially, the abuse started out subjecting Sylvia to regular beating, starvation, being forced to eat spoiled leftovers, and food out of the garbage. At one point, Sylvia was punished... And I say that in air quotes because I know you guys can't see me right now. For stealing a candy bar that she had actually purchased with her own money.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding.
I hate this woman.
It gets worse. In late August, on one occasion, Gertrude beat Jenny and Sylvia 15 times with a paddle because Paula, the eldest daughter, accused them of eating too much food at a church dinner.
So it wasn't even, like, their food. It was, like, a community event.
But she thought that she could beat the sin out of the sin of gluttony out of them.
She sounds very unstable. Very unstable.
Just wait till you meet her kids. I know I keep saying that, but you truly, it's bad. It's bad.
Yeah.
And it gets bad real quick. Mind you, she was only here, they were only supposed to be here till November. This was only a month in.
And they got there in July.
The week after the 4th of July, around right. that time. So shortly after that incident, Sylvia had mentioned to just in general that she had a boyfriend in California when she lived there from the spring of 1965. And Gertrude asked her if she had ever done anything with a boy, and Sylvia said yes, not knowing what she meant by the question. But then Sylvia opened up that she meant she had gone skating, like roller skating, ice skating, whatever, right. into a park on the beach with her guy friends and Jenny, right. her sister. She's like, yeah, I used to do things with boys. Like, I would go roller skating and go to the beach with my sister.
Right.
Whatever. So then, mind you, she's 16. She continued the conversation with Stephanie, who is the 15-year-old, and she had told Stephanie that once she had lain under the covers with a boyfriend. So she went under a blanket with a boyfriend. I would be in hell if that were that sin. I sleep in the same bed as Justin, so I don't think, I think Gertrude would hate me, but just, I mean, I slept in the same bed as you, so she probably hates us too.
That's fine.
She thinks we're lesbians.
I don't care. She hates me.
So then, Stephanie went and told Gertrude that Sylvia had laid under a blanket with a boy. And so Gertrude shamed Sylvia by saying, why did you do that? And then she began accusing Sylvia of being a prostitute and told her how filthy of a woman she was in front of the entire family.
Are you kidding me?
I can't make this shit up.
Disgusting woman.
It's awful. A few days later, the humiliation continued when Gertrude said to her, you're certainly getting big in the stomach, Sylvia. It looks like you're going to have a baby.
Stop.
And
stop.
Sylvia thought Gertrude was kidding. So she replied, yeah, it sure is getting big. I'm just going to have to go on a diet. Like joking back right. to her because she right. thought it was a fucking joke. Well, following this incident, Gertrude proceeded to tell all the girls in the house that if they did something with a boy, they would get pregnant. And then she proceeded to kick Sylvia in the crotch.
I'm sorry. You can't see me, so I'm just, like, jawed.
They're picturing
ground,
your facial
like,
expression.
Baffled, yeah. Like, I am just completely baffled.
Also, I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing because I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah. The audacity that this woman has, like... So, like, quick question, sorry. Like, a lot Answer. Of this... Like, a lot of her, like, mentality and, like, would you say it's accurate to say that a lot of this happened because of, like, her religious beliefs?
Yes.
Okay.
So they all went to church every Sunday, and Gertrude would always say stuff that she's, like, an impure girl and that she never went to church. But then later on, like, all the children testified, like, Sylvia always went to church. She prayed every night. Yeah. All the shit like that. So... A lot of it, and we'll get more into it a little later, but a lot of it has to do with her protecting her children and just jealousy in general, because right. when she was Sylvia's age is when she got pregnant with Paula. So.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of fucked up shit. So I think she's projecting like her yes. mistakes onto, because yeah. she can't project onto her children.
Right.
So she's projecting onto someone else's. So, yeah, it's really fucked up. So, at the time of this, like, when Sylvia moved in about a month or two later, you know, the whole thing where Gertrude kicked Sylvia in the crotch and called her a prostitute, Paula was 3 months pregnant.
That was her own daughter, right?
Her own daughter, but no one knew. So Paula, at the time, was 3 months pregnant and was super jealous of Sylvia because she was pretty, because she was smart, because she wasn't pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And she took, you know, as I said, all of her anger out on Sylvia, and she attacked Sylvia, knocking her off a chair and onto the floor. At another point, at dinner, and this one's fucked up. Gertrude, Paula, and a neighborhood boy. Like I said, remember, they're starving her and making her eat trash. So normally I don't think it would affect a person, but it did to her because she was already so sick after a month and a half. So during dinner one time, Gertrude, Paula, and a neighborhood boy named Randy Gordon Leper force-fed Sylvia a hot dog loaded with, like, mustard, ketchup, spices, relish, literally everything you can think of. Force-fed it to her, and then she threw it up, and then the three of them proceeded to force her to eat her vomit.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, my
and,
God.
And, like, I this really hate girl. To tell you, it only gets worse.
This poor girl.
I think I'm emotionally shutting myself down because I just don't think I can handle what's coming. It's awful.
Yeah.
So this part, I'm not necessarily sure if it's true, and I'm going to explain that in a minute. But out of anger and retaliation, which rightfully so, Sylvia is said to have started a rumor about Paula and Stephanie saying that they were prostitutes so that they would understand how it felt for those things to be said about her. So rumor is that Sylvia went and said that these two girls are prostitutes because they were starting that rumor about her. Because everything their mother was saying, they're relaying onto all these kids at school. Right. And these people in the neighborhood are getting in on it and saying things and doing things to her.
And stories change, too. So, like, it's bad enough when, like, at home you're experiencing all of this, like, emotional abuse and, like, your whatever caretaker is, like, saying all this stuff about you, and then to go to school and, like, also have that stuff said about you. Like, I'm sure it probably also spread to the church or whatever. Like, her entire...
It was so much worse back then.
Right.
Because, you know, actually beating the shit out of someone was okay in the 60s. And, yeah. Yeah. And so, here's the thing.
Fortunately.
Knowing what I do know about Sylvia, I don't think that she did that. I think what happened is one of the kids came home and said... Sylvia started this rumor, or she went to another kid at school and she said, Sylvia said this about me, and then it went around. Knowing the type of person she is, I mean, I don't know her personally, obviously, but there's no way. In my brain, there is literally no way. So, if she did,
and I
literally
wouldn't even
that's nothing compared to making someone eat their own fucking vomit. Are you kidding me? Starting a rumor is, like, the least a 16-year-old can do. All 16-year-olds do it, clearly, because they're, like, the rest of the kids are doing it. Like, my thoughts, as I said, they just started it to make her look bad. And so, at school, someone told Stephanie that Sylvia started the rumor. So, whether someone started it, and it wasn't her, or this person literally just came up to Stephanie and was like, hey, Sylvia said this about you, it's like, it pisses me off. So... when Stephanie got home, she asked Sylvia if she started the rumor, and Sylvia admitted to it, probably out of fear. And in response to hearing this, Stephanie punched her, which made Sylvia cry and plead how sorry she was. I don't want to read this part. Okay. Stephanie's boyfriend, whose name was Coy Hubbard, heard this rumor, and he took it upon himself to correct Sylvia's actions. I'm saying correct in air quotes. He then beat Sylvia's head against the wall and flipped her backwards onto the floor. I'm starting to cry. When Gertrude heard about the rumor, she then beat Sylvia with a paddle again. At another point in time, completely unrelated to the rumors, Paula had beat Sylvia so viciously in the teeth and the eyes that she broke her own wrist, and then out of anger for Sylvia breaking her wrist, which wasn't Sylvia's fault, she then beat Sylvia with the fucking cast.
No.
Because she broke her wrist while she was beating the shit out of her. And when they put the cast on her arm, she then proceeded to use it to beat the shit out of her again.
You do not deserve any of this.
Yeah.
And I know it's gonna get worse, but like...
we might need to take a break in a couple minutes, because it's bad.
Like, everyone... yeah. But to have, like, not only just, like...
all of her kids...
woman, but like all of
and these girls
too.
That were your
like,
friends,
I refuse to just say their names.
You met them at school, you went to their house to, like, go hang out with them, and now they were your friends, and now they're just but to have these girls that you went to school with just, like, beat the shit out of you, these people who you thought you were friends with, that's so heartbreaking.
Right. Right. No. And to not have done anything.
She was pretty.
Wrong. Like, to not
she
have.
She was pretty.
Like,
that was it.
Instigated it at all. Right. It is just that they were jealous.
Yeah.
Oh, well. So screwed up.
Okay. Breathing. 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 So moving on to like when school started. Earlier in the school year, Jenny and Sylvia saw their older sister Diana at a local park while. Nope. Oh, yeah, sorry, while they were with the 11-year-old daughter, Marie. And Diana gave Sylvia a sandwich because Sylvia was hungry because they're not feeding her. And Marie went and told Gertrude that Sylvia, like, stole a sandwich from someone, and then Gertrude accused her of gluttony again. So then, because of this... Paula then choked and bludgeoned Sylvia before she and Gertrude forced Sylvia in a scorching hot bath to cleanse her of her sin. Whenever Sylvia fainted from the pain, Gertrude would grab her by the hair and smash her head against the bathtub to wake her up. They do need
it
to be corrected.
Like they need to be corrected.
Coochie Copy? They need to be corrected. What?
They need to be...
What do you mean?
Corrected.
Killed.
Killed.
No, I needed that. Like, I need the buffer there. We're keeping that in. Even if people don't know what we're talking about, we need that buffer. Yeah. So, sorry if that's too much. Anyway.
It's fine. It's fine.
Just, yeah. Just watch season Pop's one, Burgers. Episode two.
Just watch Pop. Anyway.
Okay. Breathing. I need to breathe for a second. So, that was early September that I just talked about with her seeing her sister at the park. A few weeks later...
So yeah, she had been there for a couple months now.
So a few weeks later, Jenny and Sylvia saw Diana again at the park, but they were by themselves that time. And they were telling Diana of all the abuse, but Diana thought they were exaggerating because they were, like, their parents just kind of left them with these people, and that's what troubled kids do.
Right.
And the thing is, they also didn't tell Diana where they were living because they were scared.
Oh.
A few weeks later, a neighborhood father had reported to the school that a girl with open sores across her entire body was living at the Banachesky household. The school nurse visited because Sylvia hadn't been to school in a few days, and when the nurse came to the school, Gertrude told her Sylvia had run away and the sores were from poor personal hygiene. She's like, oh, she ran away. Also, she doesn't bathe.
Are
also,
you
she's
kidding
a prostitute.
Me right now? Why would you believe that? As, like, oh my god, it bothers me so much. Also, it also breaks my heart that her sister, like, didn't believe them, but just thought that they were over-exaggerating. Like,
well,
that breaks
she follows
heart.
Up in a little while.
Okay.
At least it's someone not that she noticed... didn't believe them, she just thought that they were exaggerating because they didn't like where they were living. And, like, oh, you got a spanking once in a while. Right. Like, it's the 60s. But she didn't realize.
But it's also, like, at least someone, like, noticed her that she, you know, that she wasn't.
But for another parent to fucking notice, and for, like, for all these kids to know what's going on.
Right.
And for someone else's parent to have to notice, and then there's no follow through.
Right.
So, more drama at school. Sylvia needed gym clothes to participate in her gym class, but Gertrude would not get them for her, and Sylvia couldn't work anymore because she's literally being held hostage after school and on weekends. So Sylvia ended up stealing one from the school so she could participate in the class, but Gertrude found the stolen gym clothes and then beat a confession out of her with a 3-inch-wide belt and then burned her with cigarettes. Then this bitch completely switches up and starts lecturing her on premarital sex. She kicked her in the genitals, again, whipped her, and then burned her fingertips with matches. But at this point, Stephanie finally grew a conscience and was trying to get her mother to stop. Like, she was... A lot of the reason the kids were in on it is because that's how they were raised. And I don't think they really understood. And... As old as 15 is,
right,
to hear now, back then it was a completely different time. Like, you were a child. I mean, you still are a child at 15, but...
Yeah.
They did know better, but I'm not defending them in any way, shape, or form. It's just, it's very much a nature over nurture thing, I guess, is my point. Very much a nurture thing.
Yeah. Like, if you grow up right. in that sort of household, that's all you know.
Exactly.
Like, it's, you're going to do it. It's not an excuse, like, you're still an awful human being, but if you don't know anything right. else, like, can
and I
you
think,
really help
I
yourself?
I think Stephanie with Sylvia, so. It was more of, like, a sister bickering type thing because, like, I know people who get in fistfights mm-hmm. with their siblings, and I don't think... Because things didn't really get, I mean, they were obviously terrible, but I don't think she understood the extent of what was happening to Sylvia up until this point, because Gertrude regularly spanked yeah. her children with paddles. So I don't yeah. think she really understood how horribly Sylvia was being treated up until this point. And that's why she started defending her, telling her mom to stop, and Gertrude right. just wouldn't listen. And Stephanie was literally the only person who would stick up for Sylvia. And Jenny, her sister, obviously... cared about her a lot and loved her, but she was so scared of Gertrude that she didn't stick up for her, and she got a lot of shit yeah. for that in court.
Yeah,
because they were like, well, if you loved your sister, then why didn't you do anything? And it's like, she's 15, she's a child, she has polio, she's disabled, she can't even run.
Yeah,
she has nowhere to go.
Yeah,
like, she was so scared. So, and we'll get into that more, but I need to go on that tangent because, I don't know, I'm pissed off and I just wanted to stop reading about her torture for 30 seconds. Are you ready to keep going? All right.
Yeah.
At this point, Gertrude would force Jenny to beat her sister and then would abuse Jenny if she didn't hit Sylvia. But Sylvia would also tell Jenny to do it because she did not want Jenny to get hurt.
Oh my God. Such a fucking heart of gold.
She told her sister it was okay, and she knew that it, you know, I don't know if she said this out loud, but in the back of her head, she knew it didn't mean that Jenny didn't love her.
Yeah. Because it's like survival at that point.
Right. And she's her protector. Like, Sylvia was her guardian angel up until that point. So right. it's like, she's going to protect her as much right. as she can, no matter what she's going through. So, yeah. Yeah. So Jenny was being threatened and she involved, I mean, one person is enough to get involved, like one person to be doing this, but to involve children into this. You're raising sadists. Like, what the fuck? Yeah. So by now, oh, this part's great. This is going to piss you off. By now, the next door neighbors had, you know, heard Sylvia screaming and suspected that Gertrude was hurting her and said that Sylvia looked like a zombie.
Finally.
But they never reported it to the authorities because it wasn't any of their business.
I'm sorry, child abuse is not your business.
Well, because they're also hearing all the shit that she's a prostitute and a runaway and a horrible child, and like...
Yeah, but that shouldn't...
No, that, exactly. Know. But if you're hearing like children screaming...
Like, I don't... Sorry, I'm like...
No, it's okay. It's...
Like, teared up a little bit at that last part, so I'm just like wiping away my tears, but like, how could you live with yourself... Yeah, how could you live with yourself knowing that and not doing anything? Like, I cannot... fathom, like, if I was living next to that, I don't know how you would be able to live with yourself. That's all I have to say.
Well, she even said in court, like, well, it wasn't any of my business. And I'm like, how do you just go in front of a court and be like, I didn't report abuse because it's not my fucking business? It is your business,
and you're part of the problem.
Okay, well, yeah. This is where it starts to, like, this is about the last 3 weeks of Sylvia's life. I'm just, like, warning you in advance, this is the most brutal part of the entire thing. At the beginning of October, Diana had figured out that her sisters were living with the Banaszewskis, and she went by the house to see them. Gertrude denied Diana entry to the house, and about 2 weeks later, she ran into Jenny outside, and Jenny told Diana that she can't say what's happening or she'll get in trouble. And she didn't call the fucking cops.
Are you kidding me? So she went and followed up. And her own sister told her that she couldn't tell her what was going on.
Because she'll get in trouble. And then the woman who's fucking house that her literal two younger sisters are staying at is like,
did not let her in.
You can't come in my home.
That makes no sense to me. Also, their parents also at this point had basically just like,
they were, well, they were like visiting once in a while, but they
carnival.
Gertrude was telling them how shitty Sylvia was being and that she's running off and like being with all these boys and that she's never home. Like, yeah, she's just being a slut. Like, she used that word for
Wait,
her.
But like, that's your daughter. Like, you should know your daughter. Like, why wouldn't that, well, raise a red
fighting,
flag for
they
you?
Were fighting her on it, and they're like, and Gertrude was like, no, she's just been so angry since you guys left and whatever, whatever. Really, no one, I think, like, anyone. Literally nobody in this scenario cared about her except for Jenny.
Right.
And people...
And Jenny had to protect herself as well.
That's the thing. And the thing that pisses me off is people still, to this day, will shit on Jenny's involvement. And it's like, you don't get to do that.
No.
She was not a willing participant. The other kids were. The other kids willingly...
Right.
Like, hurting Sylvia.
Right. And they knew what their mother was doing as
right.
well. Right. And, like,
weren't doing anything about it. And Jenny's trying to drop hints and no one's taking them.
Like, trauma will... Right. And, like, going through this much abuse and experiencing, like, for yourself and seeing, like, someone you love, like, experience this abuse, like... You have to understand at this point, like, right. you're just trying to, like... stay alive, basically. You're trying to, like, protect yourself and, like, protect... She was trying to protect Sylvia, I'm
sure.
Well,
because if she dies, who's gonna tell the story?
Right, right. Anyway.
Oh, God. Oh, this is the... Okay. So, around the same time that Jenny ran into Diana, Gertrude held a knife over her own head and then told Sylvia to fight her. And Sylvia said she didn't know how to fight and she didn't want to fight her. And so Gertrude just cut her leg with the knife. Just sliced her leg with the knife. Like, casually. Like, it's no big deal. And then this part is, like, the huge giant trigger warning. It happens twice. And it's bad. So to, quote, prove to Jenny what kind of girl her sister was, Gertrude made Sylvia strip and force a glass Coke bottle into her vaginal canal in front of all of the kids in the neighborhood and her own kids.
Oh. Oh,
I'm upset.
No.
I'm sorry. I needed... Because of this incident, Sylvia became incontinent, so... Yep. Couldn't hold her pee anymore. And... Because she couldn't hold her pee and she kept wetting herself, she was forced to live in the basement.
So she just locked her away.
Kind of. She was tied up, naked, starved, and deprived of water. Occasionally, she was tied to the railing of the basement stairs without her feet touching the ground. So just, like, dangling on the banister.
Oh my God.
I'm gonna try to get through this because if I spend too much time on it. Eventually Coy Hubbard, who was Stephanie's boyfriend, and several other classmates, neighborhood kids, they would go to the house just to torture Sylvia with the Banachewski kids. And Gertrude encouraged the neighborhood kids to harm Sylvia in horrific ways, sometimes charging them 5 cents apiece.
Are you kidding me? It was like a fucking game to them.
And I'm like, why did literally not a single one of you tell anybody?
How did, like, no one...
That's what I'm saying.
...know or care that this was going on? Like, at this point, there's so many people involved. Like, there has to be some sort of knowledge in the neighborhood that, like, this is happening. Like, do these kids' parents, like, freaking know what they're doing? Like, where your kids are going?
Exactly.
Like,
and it's like, the one person that actually gives a fuck can't do anything.
Right. And, like, no one's seeing Sylvia anymore,
well,
I imagine.
Because,
so, what,
well,
you know?
I forgot to mention this part. So, once she was locked in the basement... Gertrude reported to the school that I've heard in two sources, so either she ran away or that she was in a juvenile detention center. And that's why no one was seeing her anymore. But she spent the rest of her life in the basement.
Disgusting human being. Disgusting.
This is another trigger warning. They used her body as a practice dummy for judo. They would cut her, tie her up, and burn her with cigarettes over 100 times. They raped her and brutally mutilated her genitals by, like, kicking her, punching her, raping her with objects, probably. You guys can turn this off. This is the time where everyone leaves. It's okay. I forgive you. I kind of want to leave too, guys. I don't blame you. Throughout Sylvia's time living in the basement, Gertrude would gather her kids and the neighborhood kids to restrain and gag her before subjecting her to a scalding hot bath and literally rub salt in her wounds. We're almost done. We're almost done with the torture before we get to some happy things. One time, Gertrude and her 12-year-old son, John, rubbed urine and feces from Dennis Jr.'s diaper into her mouth. They then gave her half a small cup of water, saying it's all she had for the rest of the day. A few weeks later, John tortured the very malnourished girl by allowing her to eat a bowl of soup, but only with her fingers. He would then take the bowl away whenever she reached for it, because she had been locked in the basement for, like, 2 weeks now, and she hadn't had any food. And he was like, you can eat soup with your fingers. How the fuck are you gonna eat soup right. with your fingers, you asshole? He's 12! 12 years old!
Literally raising sadistic kids.
That's what I'm like, saying. It's like...
I can't.
All these people get what's coming, I swear. I hope so, because They do.
Am livid right now.
They do. So, eventually, Gertrude allowed Sylvia to sleep back upstairs if she could learn not to pee herself. But, you know, it's literally their fault that she can't use the bathroom properly. So that night, Sylvia was really thirsty because they're not giving her any water. And so she asked Jenny to go get a glass of water for her. And inevitably, that led her to wetting the bed.
Mm.
And so as a punishment, Gertrude then again forced Sylvia to insert a glass Coke bottle into her vagina before sending her back into the basement.
This woman is terrible. I hate her.
I do too. And she's, I don't body shame, but she's fucking ugly. Like, in the picture, I'll show you the one picture, but she's supposed to be, like, 36 or 37, and she looks like she's 80. Like, she looks like shit.
Yeah, because hate fucking ages you.
Yeah.
And being a disgusting human being ages you.
God is not on her side. Good. Very I'm glad clearly she's ugly. This.
She does not deserve anything. Yeah. No. You deserve to be ugly, because you're ugly inside and out.
It's so fucking gross, dude. Okay, so soon after, I forgot about this part, and this is, okay. Reading this is one thing, and then having to read it out loud and actually say it is just horrific.
Yeah.
So after Gertrude made her, you know, do that and then send her back to live in the basement, she ordered Sylvia to come upstairs to the kitchen, where she proclaimed, "You have branded my daughters, now I'm going to brand you." Gertrude took a red-hot needle and carved the letter I into Sylvia's abdomen. And then she handed the needle off to neighborhood boy Richard Dean Hobbs, who then finished etching the words, "I am a prostitute and proud of it," into her abdomen.
Oh my god.
And if you look at the crime scene photos, the autopsy photos, that is the first picture you're going to find. And it's horrific looking. Like, I mean, that it was botched into her. Like, and that was for, like, she didn't even, she never did anything in the first place. But she wasn't even, quote unquote, punished for anything at that point. Like, she was just doing it to hurt her. And then for, like, some other kid from the neighborhood to just help with that and carve the rest of that into her, no. So then, Richard, the same kid who carved that into her abdomen, and a 10-year-old, Gertrude's 10-year-old daughter, Shirley, they led Sylvia back into the basement, and then they used an anchor bolt to burn the letter S beneath her left breast. Probably for slut. And they applied the loop of the bolt backwards on the top, so the scar turned into the number 3.
Oh.
So it wasn't an S, it was a number 3.
And this girl was 10? 10.
Yes. She was 10 years old, and branding Sylvia with a bolt.
Mm-hmm.
A few days later, Sylvia was forced to, I heard in some sources that she had to do this completely nude. She was forced to display the carvings and burns to the neighborhood children, with Gertrude claiming she had received the engraving at a sex party.
What?
So I heard that I read in some sources that she was, like, naked and just outside in the neighborhood.
And no one, like, said anything?
No. And that's what I'm not understanding, is, like, what the fuck?
Right, like...
Everyone in this town should be an accessory to murder.
Right. Right.
Anyway, I think that's, like, pretty much the last of the really awful shit. I mean, it's still not great, but this is pretty much the end of all the really, really awful things. So, that night that she was put on display, Sylvia confided in Jenny, and she said, quote, "I know you don't want me to die, but I'm going to die. I can tell it."
Mm-hmm.
The next morning, Gertrude made Sylvia write a letter to her parents stating that she had run away, and basically that being promiscuous got her raped and tortured by men. And after writing the letter, being forced to write the letter, Sylvia was tied to the basement railing and offered crackers, which she refused by saying, "Give it to the dog, I don't want it."
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing, these people had a fucking dog. How much you want to bet those kids hurt the dog?
I don't doubt it. They deserve nothing.
Gertrude then forced the crackers into her mouth before she and John beat Sylvia in the stomach. John's the 12-year-old, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And then Gertrude came up with a plan to have John and Jenny blindfold Sylvia, take her to Jimmy's forest, and leave her there to die. On October 25th, Sylvia overheard this plan and attempted to escape from the basement, but on her way out the front door, Gertrude caught her because she was so weak, malnourished, dehydrated, she had basically no motor function left.
Yeah.
Gertrude then force-fed Sylvia toast, in which she couldn't consume due to the severity of her dehydration. Yeah. So because of that, Gertrude beat Sylvia in the face with a curtain rod until sections of the rod were bent into right angles. Coy Hubbard, who we remember, Stephanie's shitbag boyfriend, took it upon himself to take the curtain rod from Gertrude and beat Sylvia unconscious with it before being dragged back into the basement.
Mm-hmm.
By the morning of October 26th, Sylvia wasn't able to speak or move her limbs. Gertrude tried to get her to drink some milk and eat a donut, but being unable to move, Sylvia couldn't eat or drink. Gertrude proceeded to then throw her on the floor and drag her back into the basement. Later in the day, Paula asked Sylvia to recite the alphabet, in which she could only say the first four letters.
Oh, man.
John, they had a hose, like, in their house,
mm-hmm.
and he, or, like, a water, like, not a faucet, but,
A spout?
They're usually on the outside. Yeah, and you connect your hose to it. Well, they had one in the basement. And so John, the 12-year-old, connected a hose to it and sprayed her with it to clean her, and she attempted to escape by going up the stairs, but Gertrude stomped on her head while she was crawling up. Stephanie and Richard, who I mentioned, he was the one who had carved the thing into her chest or her abdomen. They drew a warm bath for Sylvia and dressed her in new clothes. After her bath, they then laid her on a mattress where she uttered her last words, that she wished, quote, that her daddy was here, and she asked Stephanie to take her home. When Stephanie realized that Sylvia stopped breathing, she performed CPR, while Gertrude was screaming that Sylvia was faking it. Gertrude, in an attempt to wake her up, beat Sylvia's dead body with a book, shouting, "Faker, faker." Richard Hobbs called the police, and upon arrival, Gertrude gave them the letter she made Sylvia write and told them she had been tending to her wounds for an hour and that she ran away with a group of boys who did this to her. Jenny told the police, "You get me out of here and I'll tell you everything," which she did.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's, like, everything that happened in the house. Thank God, because I can't deal with that anymore. And then I'm going to talk about the autopsy and then the fate that everyone met. So, Sylvia's autopsy showed over 150 separate wounds in addition to being emaciated at her time of death. Her injuries included burns, bruising, and severe muscle and nerve damage.
Mm-hmm.
Her vaginal cavity had been swollen shut, and her hymen was still intact, therefore disproving everything Gertrude had said about her. All of her fingernails had been broken backwards, and most of her external skin had been peeled or receded. They inflicted so much pain on her that the autopsy showed that when she was in pain, she was biting her lip, and she had been biting it so hard she bit through her bottom lip, severing part of it from her face.
Wow.
Her cause of death was found to be a subdural hematoma due to a blow to the right temple, and the beating with the curtain rod is ultimately what killed her, but side effects of everything else obviously didn't contribute to that.
Yeah.
Or obviously contributed to that, rather. This part's fucked up. So there were so many people in that house who could have called the cops, but rigor mortis had fully developed when the police discovered her body, indicating that she had been dead for up to 8 hours before they were called.
Oh, wow.
And then I wrote, fuck all these hoes, I'm not talking about their trials.
That's completely fair.
So this is, like, kind of the happy ending we all need. So on May 19th, 1966, Gertrude was found guilty of first-degree murder and sentenced to life in prison.
Yeah, as you should.
Paula was found guilty of second-degree murder and sentenced to life in prison.
Yep.
Richard, Coy, and John were all found guilty of manslaughter and received sentences of between 2 and 21 years. Gertrude was released in 1985 for good behavior, but she died in 1990 from lung cancer because she was an aggressive chain smoker. Paula was paroled in 1972, but after working at a school district for 12 years under the name Paula Pace, they discovered her true identity and fired her.
Wait, after 12 years?
Yes. She was working for the school district for 12 years.
I mean, thankfully she was fired, but that's such a long time to be near kids with that freaking history. Oh, that my history. God.
Yep. But yeah, she changed her name, and when they figured out her background, she got fired.
Yeah.
Richard, Coy, and John all served less than 2 years.
What?
Richard. Yep. Well, it's okay. They get what's coming to them. Richard died of lung cancer in 1972 at 21 years old.
Okay.
Bitch died quick.
Yep. Yeah. No, as you should.
Coy sustained a criminal record and was in and out of jail for the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. And then I was telling you this before we started recording. He had a job, but then when An American Crime came out and they realized it was him, he got fired. And then immediately after, he died in 2007 of a heart attack.
As you should. Get out of here, scum.
Well, John, the 12-year-old, he's a lying piece of shit. John became a minister, and he died of diabetes complications in 2005. But until the day he died, he claimed that he only hit Sylvia once.
Okay. You scumbag.
You did not make her eat your baby brother's shit. I fucking hate it. Well, Jenny, let's talk about Jenny.
Yes, can we?
Jenny moved on to get married and have two kids, but she unfortunately was heavily traumatized and reliant on anxiety medication, and she died of a heart attack in 2004.
Oh, man.
And then the last note that I have is a very, very good note. The Sylvia's Child Advocacy Center was founded in 2010 to assist child victims of abuse and neglect. And then I have an excerpt from their website. It's like their mission. It says, our mission at Sylvia's Child Advocacy Center is to reduce trauma to a child victim of abuse by allowing them to tell their story in a safe, comfortable, and child-focused environment with a trained forensic interviewer who will ask age-appropriate and non-leading questions. The child multidisciplinary team of law enforcement, prosecutor's office, child protective services, mental health provider, and victim advocate work together, shepherd the child and his or her family toward the first steps of healing.
I love that. I'm glad that that organization exists.
Yeah, me too.
You know who started it?
I can check. It doesn't say.
It's okay. I was just...
There's like a read about the staff section.
I was just curious because I wonder if like her sister had involvement in that.
I know it's in Lebanon, Indiana, but that's about it.
Well, it exists and that's what's important.
So, yeah, that's what I have.
Wow.
It was rough.
That was really heavy. Yeah. I'm glad that her sister, like, got to, I don't know, like,
at least live a somewhat normal life. Right. Like, she was able to get out. And...
Right. And anyone who has anything to say about her can rightfully fuck off because you know nothing. And just let this girl have a break.
Right.
And may they both rest in peace.
I know. At least they're together now.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
I can't imagine losing someone that horrifically and, like, feeling so helpless. And I can't imagine the survivor's guilt. Yeah. And how, like, how horrible she felt that she wasn't getting abused but her sister was. Or, like, maybe not being able to say goodbye to her.
Right.
And just, it's so chilling knowing that Sylvia was like, I know you don't want me to die, but I'm going to. The day before she died.
Yeah. Yeah. She knew.
And she fought. Like, she really tried. Anyway, watch An American Crime. That's a good movie. Elliot Page plays Sylvia, and he was incredible.
King.
Huh?
Our king. Our king. Savior, Elliot Page.
It was a really good movie. It's very accurate. And, you know, there's a lot that they left out, as I said. And there's also some plot changes to kind of... Or, I wouldn't say plot changes, but they kind of... move some things around to make it flow better. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Jenny and Sylvia's sisters weren't, or sister and brothers weren't in the movie. And yeah, but overall, it's a very good representation of what happened. I suggest you watch it. If you're not totally traumatized by this, I am. This is ruining my life. But to lighten it up next week, I think we're going to do some Urban Legends stuff. Right?
That'll be fun and light and something Halloween-y because it's spooky month.
Getting the spooky season. Oh, okay. Well, now that I need to, you know, breathe and whatever. Anyway, you can find me on Instagram at yourworstnightmaretcp. You can send me your listener stories or case suggestions or just say hi to me at yourworstnightmaretcp@gmail.com. You can become a patron and give me money because I have $400 in vet bills to pay. Because
you're the best
dog. And that is patreon.com/yourworstnightmaretcp. I don't think I'm forgetting anything else. My Tee Public shop isn't working, so please ignore that. I'm going to find a better outlet for my, not outlet, but a better shop to list my merch. And yeah, and don't forget to check out Extreme Paranormal. By the one and only Michael Extreme. He's a good guy. He's amazing and he's funny and you're gonna love him.
Yay, Mike.
So, Addie and I will definitely be listening to that when it comes out. So yeah.
With that being said, I'm adding it right now.
You're adding it right now. I can send you the link. Yeah, with that being said, I'm sure we will see you at some point next week, assuming one of us doesn't have a chaotic disaster in our life, which we always do. Okay, bye.